Good morning. Today is Thursday, December 8th, 2016. This is the 11 a.m. Josephine County Board of Commissioners County Administration Workshop. And first on our agenda this morning, we have Treasury, and this is regarding Order Number 2016-057. Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, well, tax time's over. Yes. All the fires are out. Just now printing receipts that people mailed in. Please, can I have my receipt? So, one more time. Well, that's true.
The word for right?
December 17th?
The number that's in my mind relative to your office, right?
No.
We're
absolutely.
Now what?
Something that has to happen by that date, and it'll be all clean. I'll clarify.
Yes.
Taxes are due. No. The option for refusal.
Oh.
January 17th.
Yeah.
Your office.
He's mentioned it, but he hasn't told me anything about it, so I haven't heard anything.
You feel better now?
So I'm just going to go.
Okay.
La la la.
Until then.
Yes.
Okay, this is a refund of some taxes.
Yes, I have actually two parcels here, two accounts. One is where a title company paid and an owner paid. There's been no ownership change, so we assume on this that they're refinancing. He paid it to, because he paid it. Title company paid it to clear the title. So that's an easy breezy, straight back to the owner of record. $14,168.94, no interest.
Okay.
The other one is Parkway Village LLC, and they paid it, and they requested a late file exemption that was approved, and so we modified the tax down for a part of the. It's just actually just for a part of the parcel. It wasn't for everything at Parkway Village. I think it's just the one building that the workforce, I think, is in. But I'm not real sure. But anyways, it was...
building?
Yeah, okay, that one building. But it was reduced by $20,000. They'd already paid it. And luckily for this, because it is a modification, usually we would have to pay interest back to them. Because it is a late file exemption for ORS 307.1626a, no interest has to be paid to these guys. So, again,
it's just a refund. Both of them are just refunds.
Yep, straight back to the owner. But per our order, anything over $10,000, the Board of Commissioners have to approve.
Why do we have that?
That was put in technically because the statutes say the Board of Commissioners has to do approve all refunds.
But we've delegated you the authority under $10,000?
Under $10,000, yes.
So should we adjust that?
I think we need to because we are coming up against this at least two or three times a year now because taxes have risen so much.
Yeah.
So
and these are just administrative clarifications.
Yes.
There's really... nothing really at our discretion to say that we're not going to do it.
Exactly.
And you're a duly elected official who has.
Okay. So I think
maybe you can work on.
I will do that.
That'd be great.
We'll put forward a new order and have it changed.
Can we quote you that the reason that the taxes have risen so much
since 1995? Okay. The time span.
Look at the time span.
A little gasoline is all I'm going to.
So that is all I have.
All right. Thank you. And
go forth and
do it. Do this on the consent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Department of Business, we have Public Health. And this is Order Number 2016-058 in the matter of authorization of execution of a lease agreement with the Oregon Health Authority for lease of county property.
Yes.
This is a renewal again?
This is not a renewal. This is a new rental agreement. When DHS built their new building, they did not allocate, they did not plan for the Region 5 Healthcare Preparedness Coordinator. And so this is renting a desk space in the corner of room 120 at the Public Health Department so that she has a place to work.
Okay.
The monthly rent is $300 a month and $3,600 annually.
Okay. Any other questions?
I think that's great. You've got the space.
We do.
And how did you arrive that way? Because it's ironic, it's 89 cents a square foot, and it matches exactly what we're trying to do. So I think that's good. We're reflecting like a comparative.
Right. We just, at some point in the past, had asked, you know, what a good rate was.
Yeah.
And then we just have stuck with that and not increased it at all over the last few years.
I think it's a little under market rate, and but it's fine for us. And we're definitely covering our costs.
Mm-hmm.
We are getting charged 60 cents a square foot. So.
And
but we've got other incentives that are in addition to that.
Sure.
Somebody else. So.
Cool.
And the great thing about this person as an individual, she, when we had the last big fires and had to stand up the EOC, the person's name, her name's Beth Depew, and she sat in and helped the emergency manager run the EOC.
Mm-hmm.
So having her nearby is a nice thing.
That's great.
Good. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Move us forward. Admin. Okay, airports. Do we have Mr. Graves here yet?
Mm.
Oh, he's not here yet. Okay, well, let's have Mr. O'Hare for our finance report.
Sure. Thank you.
Moving along.
So I have brought just two things to the table today. Informational, in one sense, we're purchasing a truck out of equipment reserve for community corrections. Robert Keith, the fleet manager, it's in the budget, it's part of the budget. The budget was $30,000. The truck's going to cost $28,000, and it's replacing it's 150,000 miles, 2004 Explorer with a new Ford Explorer, and we purchased it through the state price agreement. So.
We don't have to do anything. That's
no, you don't have to do anything. It's already part of the budget.
It's already in the budget.
Itemized, been approved, but informational only. This next one is almost the same thing. I'm bringing back the contract for the jail camera system. It's the contract to upgrade and update the camera system at the jail with modern, newer technology.
That works.
It's part of the budget. It was an itemized project within the adopted budget. And the funding is coming directly from the jail commissary account, so those funds are dedicated and limited to in what they can do. But the contract itself is $348,000 for the... I need a motion to approve the contract. Is what I'm pushing for. Yes.
Forward.
That's what I would like. Is a motion to approve, and then just to delegate for the signature to delegate on
to the chair,
to sign it so we can start moving this forward.
I make a motion to such effect that we approve the bill, the deal contract, delegate Commissioner Walker as the chair to sign on behalf of the board.
Okay. Is that
a second? I'll second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further question or discussion?
Thanks for working on this.
Thank you. I know it took a lot of gathering of data and putting things together.
Reviewed by legal. So I just want to add that in. So. Reviewed by legal. So.
Okay, roll call.
Even more importantly, it's reviewed by the sheriff and all that.
Yes, correct.
The
financial
element that we utilize in commissary funds is the predominant funding mechanism. It's pretty huge.
Yes, yes.
Because sometimes it can be challenging to use commissary funds for something that actually works.
Mm-hmm.
For the parameters of it.
Provides
the it's pretty limited, but to find something that's really beneficial.
Yeah.
Okay, roll call, please.
Yes.
Commissioner Harris. Commissioner
Hunt?
Yes.
Commissioner Walker?
Yes. Motion carries.
Yes, I have it electronically. Actually, I'll send it to you.
Okay. Anything else?
That is all I brought for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
for sticking around for the airport.
No, that's
okay.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. We have Mr. Graves here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's everybody?
Good.
I brought some supplemental information here over and above what's in your packet. But bottom line is that we need to do something about the residence that's at the airport at the Illinois Valley. And my primary concern is to make sure that the family that's living in there is safe and warm and dry. And I think that after looking at all the options for getting them into a safe, warm, dry residence at the airport, that the manufactured home route that I've proposed makes the most sense, because we don't have to decide immediately what to do with the old house. I have Thorin Halverson of Southern Oregon Home Inspectors scheduled to go in and do a thorough professional inspection with a written report so that we know exactly what we have in that old home office. But in the meantime, as opposed to moving the family out and paying for their accommodations on a monthly basis at some other location in the air, you know, this way we keep the caretaker at the airport, which I think is a really important security consideration. And I think if you did a formal or an informal poll of all the people at the Illinois Valley Airport, you would find that the crime rate dropped off to nothing after Jason moved into that spot. So that's an important consideration. But we have things that need to be mitigated. So I've looked at you know, all the options, and this seems to be something that we can effect very quickly. When you're walking around in one of these Palm Harbor homes, and I've toured them down at exit 24 on I-5, you can't tell you're not in a stick-built home. They're really amazing. And that's a good asset for the airport. I think it's a good expenditure. It's worthy expenditure for our property reserve fund. And I have a plan to pay that back over time so that we have a good asset that we can use as an airport office in the future when that time comes. So the amortization schedule that I sent out to everybody includes the cost of the home, and I have a packet that includes some information about the Palm Harbor homes as well for each one of you and for Terry. And I have this electronically as well, so I can... Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Extra.
So you'll see...
You want to
I will. I will, yeah. You can have mine.
No,
I've included the $79,000 or $80,000 cost of the manufactured home, as well as the $25,000 cost for the site prep and installation of the home. In other words, those two numbers together will leave us with a move-in ready building, and that will take about 2 to 3 months from the word go. They build these homes on order, and so I'm told it takes 1 or 2 months once they have payment received to build the home. And then a gentleman named Cliff Tance, I've talked with several installers, that he's out of Shady Cove. He does this for a living, and he will have the site prepped, power, septic, water trenched in and ready to stubbed out.
His name's Camp?
Camps. With an S on the end.
Okay.
It's very confusing. I know. It's like, oh my gosh, another one. Yeah. How many of them are there?
Cameron, and I'm like,
yeah. So, I think this is the most cost-effective and quickest, most efficient way to solve the issue of what to do about that house and or about the occupants of the house. And it leaves us with a really good permanent building. It doesn't look like a trailer. It doesn't look like a manufactured home.
Nice.
Yeah, they're very nice looking homes. It looks like a real home, actually. And I have put in some additional money that I'd like to take from a property reserve fund and then pay back for repair of the driveway that is existing, which is just filled with tree roots and it's completely unusable. Some landscaping for the entrance to the airport, including the area around that house, putting in a fence around that home lot for security, because it is outside the airport fence, even though it's on airport property.
And it's right on the highway.
And it's on the highway. And I've included a chunk of money, $20,000, for the electrical upgrade of the warehouse building, which is an unrelated issue, but since we're talking about taking money out of property reserve, I just included that in there. And you know, about $110,000 for the home itself, and then the additional $45,000 for all the ancillary things. And then, depending on what's decided, I'm looking at all the options for the residence that's there now. It's built in 1958. It has not been maintained properly at all. I was appalled at its condition when I arrived on the scene here 5 years ago, and I've spent several thousand dollars trying to put Band-Aids on an artery, basically. And so, you know, what's a cost-effective solution, you know, for that home? That can be decided upon at a later time. I mean, the most important thing is to get the family and our caretaker, Jason, who pays rent, and we have a written contract with him to pay rent on that house. And I think that the consideration he's receiving in return for his rent payments is pretty shaky. I've included a copy of my August memo to the board regarding my assessment of the home condition. And I realize I'm not a home inspection professional. I've had Dave Bassett, and who is, as you all know, a very experienced professional engineer and an inspector. He's looked at the home, and then I'm going to have an official, you know, Southern Oregon Home Inspections. And this is a guy who's used Thorne and Bree, his wife, run the company, and they have been used for decades by real estate agents all throughout the valley. And they're very thorough, and we'll have a written report probably by a week from today or tomorrow, a week from tomorrow, on the condition of that house. The house itself, as I say, pardon me? No, $350. And I'm the airport's department.
Ryan, I met with him on another issue this morning, and I asked about whether or not he'd been out there for an inspection. He said no. Training phone calls or something like that.
Yeah, we've been talking about it quite a bit, and he thought that it was probably a good idea to have a uninvolved third party take a look at it, just because if the county inspects it and says, well, you know, we need to do XYZ, it's one thing. And then if a third party says, hey, objectively, this house is XYZ, you know, that has less of a possibility of conflict or, you know, whatever with whoever might worry about the disposition of that house in the future.
I don't know.
But I want Ryan to see it. In fact, I invited Ryan.
I see that I apply inspections of any infrastructure that's in Ryan's care.
And it's not in Ryan's care, unfortunately. So I did invite Ryan to accompany Thorne Halverson on the inspection, and he said absolutely he'd like to do that. And that's next Thursday morning at it's maybe Tuesday at 9 o'clock. I have it on my calendar, but it's next week. Yeah, so I want to make. I'll be there, and I'm sure that Ryan will be there as well. So, yeah.
Where's the new place to be sited at?
If you keep turning through the packet that you gave away, no, it's okay. There's a. I have a Google Earth photo right here, and it shows the current location of the caretaker residence. And then a white outline for the 27 by 56 foot manufactured home.
Is that single or double?
No, it's double.
It is double.
Yeah, yeah. It's two modules, and it's joined together in the middle with the ridge line. And some of the ancillary money that I requested includes money for a heat pump because it gets very hot and very cold out there in the summer. So I want, and it's, the house is completely ducted. It's ready for central heat and air conditioning. So
and there's no shade out there.
None at all.
No,
none at all.
No, it's real hot.
And to that issue, I also have some money allocated in this request to put an awning on the west and south sides of the house, because if you go to the current residence and look, and this is the third set of exterior covering that's been put on that house, it's destroyed.
Yeah.
When the storms come in, the house gets just hammered from the southwest, and the sun during the summertime is bleaching the side of the house, and so I want to put up an awning, a permanent structure awning, you know, attached to the home, just on the L shape, just the two sides here and here, and that will protect, you know, the exterior, and it'll keep the house cooler in the summer. And I think it's not a lot of additional money, and it's probably money well spent.
Well, the siding of it being here, it'd make it nicer for it moving too. They don't have to move everything in the day. Whatever, they can be moved across. Is
very true. And so, you know, it'll take a month or two for, you know, getting all the loose ends wrapped up and get the house ready for move-in. But once it's ready for move-in, then it's going to be a very quick business to move out of an old residence and into a new one. And I'm planning for that house to be there for another 30 years. I mean, it's a worthy home. You know, it's not like a trailer that you pull in and park on a site. So. And I would invite anybody to go look at the Palm Harbor Homes website, for example, if you want to see. And there's a gallery of photos. You can scroll through it and take a look at the interiors and et cetera. I have one other piece of information on here. Well, you can see the amortization schedule. Just so that it wasn't pages and pages long, I didn't display this in monthly payments, but annual payments. And so, you know, $8,600 a year. It's very doable by the airports department. Our operational budget, which is approaching, you know, $1 million a year now. It's 750 to some other number I don't have right on the top of my head. But, you know, between this expense, our annual insurance expense, our inter-service fund payments we make every month, and the existing payments that I'm making on the two hangars that we just bought earlier this year, it's still a relatively small portion of the overall budget, and I think easily handled by the department. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. So you have been making payments on the two current hangars.
Mm-hmm.
That are there for this fiscal year beginning July.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. And then you're saying that the current cash flow of the Ivy Airport is adequate to add this on top.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say that the current cash flow from both airports.
From the airports.
Yeah,
from the airports department. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is the Grants Pass Airport has always subsidized the operations at the Illinois Valley Airport. I've been working very hard to change that. I've been working very hard to bring in revenue at that airport and have offered many wonderful opportunities to the... Yeah, and I'll let it go now. Any questions?
I think this is good on the selection of the property of the modular unit
mm-hmm.
that you have done here. I went out and went through that house last month, and I wouldn't do it. The electric is 1958, dangerous.
Push button circuit breaker.
Yeah, like
really bad. Could have been outlawed.
Yeah, they're no longer legal. And
no problem.
And you know, he's been trying to kill the mold that's growing on the walls by using kills and mold killer and bleach, and it keeps coming back because it's so embedded in the sheetrock and the wood, and it's just, and the roof that's on there obviously was not installed properly. They can't use the fireplace, and the water gets in and runs down in the wall in the master bedroom. It's just.
It's wonderful.
horrible.
He doesn't live outside, but not much.
Yeah. Well, the thing is if you can see that kind of damage, and he's been fighting it that long, can you just imagine what's in the wall? You know, and of course, you can't tear the walls out until somebody's out of there because you don't want to disturb and release all that stuff while somebody's in. They've got two little children. And it may be that once he's out of it, that once you can rip all of that out and start seeing what's behind it, maybe mold remediation wouldn't be too bad, and you could use it as a structure for administrative or storage or something, but not to live in.
Yeah, I mean, the caretaker's residence has traditionally been, when the smoke jumpers left the base in 1981, since then it's been an airport office or office slash caretaker's residence. And I brought Jason in as a volunteer caretaker back in 2012 and was able to make him a half-time employee fairly rapidly because we all recognized the value of having somebody out there who was an employee and working toward the betterment of the airport. I think it's universally accepted by anybody who goes out there and takes a look that that airport has been improved hugely, big league, and that Jason's continued, you know, contributions to that airport is making it better and better every day.
Yeah.
We bring people in to look at the industrial airpark, for example, and they see, you know, acres of brush, and I mean, you can practically hear, you know, an old Outlaw Josie Wales song in the background. You know, it looks like a ghost town, and it just doesn't look very appealing. He's clearing that area right now with the tractors we bought. Thank you very much. And he's burning a gigantic brush pile every day out there during the burn season and getting that whole central area cleared out so that when we bring people in, looks great. I mean, so the value of having the caretaker at the airport is immense. It's really...
Not to mention keeping people from breaking in and stealing what's there.
Yeah, I mean, the smoke jumpers have been, their museum complex has been vandalized and broken into dozens of times over the years, not once since Jason moved in.
So he moved in originally as a volunteer, now half-time, now full-time.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Yeah. So given the future and the uncertainty thereof, I mean, it could, the caretaker's residence is going to be used, I guess.
How are you paying for this position past June?
Well, my revenues, I've been pushing my revenues up by 15% or more every single year since I've been here, and operated exclusive of salaries and benefits, et cetera. I've been operating in the black. You commissioners have found it in your hearts and in your minds to provide some economic development money to help me subsidize my Schedule D, which is my salaries. But my goal, stated goal for years, has been to increase the revenues, bring the entire airport's complex up to market value and market revenues, and I'm getting there. You can see tangible results each year. We have another large lease increase coming in with the Goodrich Organics.
Which is IV.
I've had a couple of very close calls in terms of significant revenue coming into that airport through commercial operations. Mm-hmm. And just at the last minute, things have pulled out, you know, kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I think if I keep attacking that problem, I'm going to have luck and results, and we'll be in a significantly positive cash flow situation. Can't tell you when, but I know it's going to happen, being a basically optimistic person.
I don't always want to be the person who's asking the tough questions here.
It's okay.
It feels that way, and I'm going to continue to do it. So, Mr. Gibbs, I don't want you to ever think that I don't support you and your efforts in this avenue. But I need to understand the picture.
Sure.
I think the last time you asked for an allocation for that hangar space out there, my hesitation is only because I don't understand your big picture about what is it that you're going to ask for next in your capital purchases. Are you expecting to come to the board in developing the budget next year to shore up the difference for your Schedule B from economic development dollars. I have to know your long-term plan to where I can say $8,500 a year for a position for a house, for a position you're going to have for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that right now.
Right.
And that's what I'm, those kinds of things I'm looking at having addressed here.
Mm-hmm.
You said rent is being collected currently. How much rent is, because you're looking at $8,500 a year is $708 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Are you covering that in your rent? So then you don't really, I mean, that is an answer. Great.
Yeah.
You've got it in-house and it's paid for, and as long as there's somebody there, a Jason mm-hmm. of the world, who is great, I'm sure. You know what I mean? I'm looking
right.
to try to make this as a business decision as opposed to based on emotion of a leaky roof and a family that's cold and there's mildew.
Yeah.
It's
not a very good Christmas story.
I appreciate that. I want warm, safe, and dry,
mm-hmm.
but mine is not for warm, safe, and dry for somebody who's may or may not be there after 6 months. And I don't want to scare anybody, but I got to fit this into the big picture of for at least a couple of years. You know,
right.
I don't know, nobody's got a crystal ball, and I applaud your efforts of increasing revenue out there. All of those are great. But I got to break it down and saying this is a defensible decision that this board makes.
Right.
And it's been cost-benefit analysis of what about the smoke jumpers fixing this facility up.
Mm-hmm.
I really would have loved the assessment done by this third party, which I totally applaud, having somebody else come in here who's mm-hmm. a structural person who says, no, this is what it's going to cost. So instead of spending $106, you could spend $30 and you still got the same footprint, and you can, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I'd
be happy to speak to that.
Because otherwise I'm just,
yeah.
And I don't know what you're going to be asking for next month or in your budget for, mm-hmm. you know, what's the board going to have to try to wrestle with coming up with the East Side Taxiway that makes you money. This
I've provided a strategic plan for the next 5 years with dollars associated. And
was this part of it? This was not part of it.
This was not part of it because the decision to make, or the decision that the county has made to have a caretaker residence at the airport is something that's a bigger picture item. It's overarching. It goes beyond what I can decide I want to do in the next several years. I mean, that decision is in concrete, and we're living with it, okay? The decision to come to the board and request this transaction permission for property reserve to buy these two hangars, as I stated to you at the time, that it would be a net cash flow positive for the airport, and in fact it is, and it has been from day one. So that, insofar as I didn't have a five-year strategic plan back in December that I had presented to you that included those hangar purchases, because those opportunities had never come up, I will not, enter into transactions that cost the airport money. In this case, the rent that he's paying is just under the $700 a month figure, but he's paying that rent on a house that's 58 years old, built in 1958, and it's not up to snuff, okay? Let me just leave it at that. So,
he's paying just under $700 a month right now?
Right. Yeah.
What's the expected rent?
Well, I haven't negotiated that with him yet.
Okay.
But because what's the point if we don't have the new house?
Yeah,
and
sure.
I'm trying to get this in place. His contributions to the airport in terms of numbers of hours worked, he works 40 hours a week as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
He works more than 8 hours a week contributing toward the rent for his caretaker residence. And we can...
So you
apply the load
like
to that.
The next dollar amount and then
yes.
you subtract based on if he works eight.
Yeah, he works, yeah, and he tracks that. We've been tracking that ever since he moved into the home, and that is a written contract we have in place. I put it in place with Rosemary Padgett years ago. So the county receives
compensation. Fiscal.
Yeah. Right.
And you couldn't just apply that to the, like, say, mortgage. The rent wouldn't be
right.
applicable to the mortgage.
Yeah, the rent is in-kind rent.
In-kind.
Yeah. It's very tangible. He's putting in a minimum of 8 hours a week. week in and week out. So,
in addition to the
40 that he works for the county, correct? That adds up. Well, you apply a load. I mean, is it about a 1.5, 1.4 salary?
Oh, for benefits?
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
No. Yeah, at least that, maybe 50.
I mean, even if we just take the straight time, I mean, yeah. we're saving benefits. We don't have to pay a benefit load on top of that. So if we just take a straight salary, I mean, off the top of my head, it might be, what, 17, 16 an hour? You know, and then 32 hours every 4 weeks, you know, it adds up.
So I want to say yes to this, and I have...
this is not going to be a revenue-generating project.
No,
it's different in that respect.
I know. Yeah. I get that. So,
however, it will be one that can enhance the ability to collect revenue as well as preserve the asset we already have because of the security that he has provided just by being there, preventing the vandalism, the broken doors, and the stolen materials and the damaged equipment. And
I would like to say it's a deferred expense because if the county had been maintaining that residence over the last, you know, 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, whatever, you know, then there wouldn't be no need to do this.
It's kind of like another Dimmick Tower type of thing that, you know, if the leak is there, just ignore the leak.
Yeah, yeah, they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. For the cost of a roof, you know, you wind up with this huge liability, and that we're, in a mini basis, we're facing that. You know, we've had a lot of all-volunteer labor that has been put under that house, okay?
Yeah.
And it's the metal roof.
It comes home to roost.
The metal roof, the flashing was assembled backwards.
Yeah.
So the anti-siphon crimps at the end of each, they lie on top of the next sheet instead of underneath. And, you know, it's just everything you look at, and you will find out because we'll get the written report. But
so,
when your roof leaks all the time, that's...
So the analogy that I use is like the car payment. And we're gonna buy this car. It's going to last 30 years. Mortgage is 20. But there's no down payment that I see with this structure so far. And that's a component. It's not like you can't buy a car without a down payment.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is we're not really sure we're going to have a driver. And that's up to the next board to decide, yes, that's the best allocation of those economic development dollars to shore up. If needed.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is are you going to need a similar style structure for the Grants Pass Airport? I don't have your 5-year strategic capital plan memorized, but I don't think that was included in there. But I've heard
it's not.
That there might be elements. Is that the one that had a floor problem?
It does. It has. It is. It's in deplorable condition.
So
we have an all volunteer person who lives there, who is 76 years old.
Totally.
The position is not needed necessarily.
Okay.
When he goes away, whenever that happens. I do not plan on replacing that structure.
Okay.
But I'm not going to put all of that in a 5-year strategic plan for this gentleman to read. I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, even in a public meeting. But
what I want to do, Larry, is I want to understand where you're going so that next year that if I'm getting another one of these, at some point I've got to say, this isn't adding up. I got to understand it. And right now, I think maybe what I would love to see is that we wait for the review that we're paying for that obviously has value if we're spending money on it, and to get that assessment so that I have an understanding of kind of like what we're dealing with as far as the current asset and expert.
I've paid $4,460 for the two hangars that I bought earlier this year, and we have received $8,800 in return during the same time period.
$4,460. Okay.
That's interfund transfer, JV transfer from the airports department back to the property reserve fund. I can't control the fact that previous airport managers withdrew the airport from the property reserve contributions.
Totally.
I'm putting us back in. I've been doing it gradually. Brian and I talked about that as well.
Yeah.
And this kind of transaction shouldn't really be necessary. We should have already paid in for years or decades. And, you know, we've paid 10 times. Well, I'm sorry. Let me be accurate here. 5 times what any other department pays for liability insurance. Forever. Never had a claim. So this kind of, you know, and $9,000 or $12,000 a year,
so
I pay $12,000 a year for insurance right. that I never use.
I don't want to argue here, but yeah. this is great information,
yeah.
but it's not comprehensively prepared for me that I can take and equivalate, you know, mm-hmm. apples and apples in your department. And I'm sorry that we have to go through this. And I'm fully aware that these other two members of the board are going to fully endorse this without any of these questions ever being asked. But what I don't want to do is reverse your proposal
mm-hmm.
come January 3rd, because I still have questions. And I want the review understood where I can walk out of this room and do like I do with other departments and say to anybody on the street, this is what's going on and this is why we're doing this.
Okay, so
I feel that's my job. And whether that's a conversation we have here or we have in my office, you know, where we can speak freely about whatever it is that you are thinking,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's great. And that needs to happen, and that's what I need before I can move forward.
Okay, I'm happy to do that.
I'm not quite sure how you, as the singularity commissioner, are going to reverse something that this board has decided, that the future board would be the one that would decide it.
I leave one up to decide yourself. Yeah. I know they have similar questions.
Yeah. They will. But I'm just saying that I'm just trying to imagine the person who is living in this house, and not suggesting that anybody goes out and implements this. If my mind would boggle at the potential litigious consequences for health and safety of a mold-filled house.
If building safety saw it, they would condemn it.
So if you want to talk about putting the county at liability by furthering this conversation about the potential liabilities in an open session where it could totally be provided for in an executive session,
mm-hmm.
that's up to you. I don't want to go there.
I didn't say I was going there. I'm just talking about hypothetical. You're talking about what the future board might do. I'm just talking about, I think that the care and concern for the health and safety of poor human beings under our responsibility far outweighs what this would entail. It's a reasonable solution, and it's just something that
I think it's cheaper. For example, it's much cheaper than renovating the existing house. Cheaper than tearing down the existing house and replacing it, because we have not only the cost of doing that, but the cost of relocating the family and paying for their
and then you lose the security aspect of it.
There's the security aspect during the construction phase, right. And nobody's going to guarantee that they can have the thing done in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've taken all those things into consideration in coming up with what I think is the best option to propose to the commissioners,
mm-hmm.
and that was my intention.
Yeah.
The issue of what to do with the house is not resolved. It's still being studied,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sorry that I could not get the information that I needed for this meeting in time for the meeting. So,
okay.
Not that I would never have done that.
No, I think that's fine. It's just, we're not, I don't want to interpret, but it's not as though this problem gets solved tomorrow by making this decision. It's going to take a number of months. Under the best case scenarios, you know, three, four months, I would say. And that's provided that you're going to get access to the contractors that you need in a timely fashion. Which, talking to Ryan, we're having trouble with that all over the place.
I have the contractors and the bids and in the packet that you have. The price is firm, and I've been told a maximum of 3 months from the word go. So I think that portion of your concern is defined, at least.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have more questions, but I don't think they're necessary.
Yeah, let's we'll schedule a meeting if you'd like that. I'd be happy to do that.
So, Arthur, you haven't said anything.
I was
looking at the. I know that over the last several months and weeks that we've been working on this, that Larry has talked to you about the funds that would be loaned and that he would be paying at. And do you have any questions or comments about that?
Well, I think as he pointed out, you know, for both the two existing hangars, in addition to this one, we've got a means of paying back and, mm-hmm. and a secure means, you know, within the airport department. Right. The cash flow is adequate to cover. I've got concerns about future projects at the airport, like Larry and I have discussed on looking at taxiway improvements and grants from the Biz Oregon and our matching requirements. So those are big issues that will need to be hammered out, figured out with the Board of Commissioners. This particular situation, $100,000, we've got about $2 million in the property reserve right now. It's fairly stable, but of course we need to look at, I think Commissioner Hare is accurate in saying, what's our long-term plan, not just for airports, but really the entire usage of property reserves, what projects are out there that our building operations director has, you know, scheduled or preparing for in the future.
And it isn't $2 million, and I really would mm-hmm. implore you to not categorize it in such a fashion, because mm-hmm. there's multiple deposits into that property reserve, which
you're correct.
If you keep using it that way, I'm going to absolutely insist you separate those out. Because it's misleading. I mean, for instance, if I'm doing the math on this and we're doing, say we didn't have money in the commissary for a camera system, which is very, very important from a liability standpoint, that's $400,000. Mm-hmm. How many of those potential liabilities do we have sitting out there? And if the reserve is 1.5 right now, I only have a couple of those that I could do, you know. So I got to map out what's the long-term liability for the property reserve, and factor that into maybe the next thing. And how many? Parks has three of these houses that could be in a similar state. I don't know. I haven't done an evaluation. Should those be? You know, I have to. It's not just yours. It's the whole portfolio that's sitting out there.
Right, and that's where the building operations director needs to look at.
Understood.
No. The other issue that I did discuss, I think, brought up maybe overlooked, but you know, our caretaker went from volunteer to half time to full time. That whole process, you know, in the should it happen that way, could be reversed. The point being, will that house be used in the future for long term, whether it's used by a full-time employee, a half-time employee, or a volunteer? I think the answer was yes, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I don't think the house itself will be vacant.
No.
It'll be used in for a caretaker. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very important what Commissioner Hare said. We've got long-term issues on the property reserve, long-term projects, you know, from a variety of areas, variety of departments, and those have not been defined, lined out, itemized.
And that's our guess, to say, you know, if we'd have done that, and it's kind of like the road reserve, if it had been all appropriated, theoretically, over the next 5 years or something like that, then we could definitively tell you, Larry, there's actually no money there.
Right, it wouldn't be under attack.
Right.
Exactly. Right. And unfortunately, it feels, I just have to be vigilant that it's not looked at as this piggy bank of,
sure,
well, it's just money sitting there. Because frankly, there's no difference between you borrowing from the property reserve or the general fund.
Right.
It really doesn't matter. It's just money. One is earmarked. One is open. We could allocate this from anywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the property reserve. But it has to stand up and say, no, this is why we're doing it. It's going to live on the house being vacant in a couple
of
years.
This gets paid back as well.
Would kill me, you know. That would not be for whatever happens.
Yeah, and so what I'd like to hammer out, you know, maybe with you general is what you would like to see, because I think I can produce anything that you need to have,
I'm
and
sure
I just don't
know
what that
in
is.
Your head. Yeah, I'm looking at what is the lighting approach out there. What are those projects that are going to be? Well, I mean, $50,000 for this, blah 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 for that. Like, okay, wow,
Those dollars are laid out in the five-year strategic plan that
they weren't provided, and they weren't at my fingertips, and so I apologize. They're probably here.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Definitely here.
No, but every time we get a grant, we do have an obligation that comes with it, which is the requirement for matching funds.
Absolutely.
And that's all spelled out in that strategic plan.
Get that report and address this next week, and you and I chat beforehand.
Absolutely.
That mm-hmm. 1 week.
Yep.
Really helpful to me. Feel so inclined.
I'm happy to do that, but of course the board.
Yeah, they can move.
It's up to you guys what you want to do.
Shall we put this back on next Thursday?
Fine.
Okay.
Very good. Yep. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for staying, Arthur.
Just whatever else you'll come to all of us.
I'm sorry?
Whatever the materials are.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's all going to everybody.
I'm in town minus Monday. Otherwise,
okay.
Yeah,
me too. So great. I'll be around.
Are you going to sail in the fall? Maybe Julie and I can touch base during that other meeting about the business organ stuff. There's some big stuff happening up in Scappoose that we should talk to you about.
Yeah. Well, I heard, I got a report on the leadership conference and
great.
All that. Yeah.
Okay. Good deal.
Good. Thanks. Okay.
Right. Thanks, Barry. Okay. Any other business that we need to bring up before we go on to board business? Just a second. That's okay. Come on up. That's okay. Okay, board business. Order number 2016-051 in the matter of uniform procedure for setting fees charged by county community development, adopting the fee schedule. Okay, thank you for your patience.
Start?
Yes. Go right ahead. I got it pulled up.
So my understanding is we're here to discuss both the planning side of it as well as the building safety side of it. I'll start with the planning side real quick. We have a couple minor amendments, but the big discussion was really on the annual compliance inspection program that was being proposed. My understanding is, well, I gave a legal opinion on it that basically said statutes don't prohibit it, but they don't specifically allow it, so it's kind of up to you what you want to do with it. In the meantime, I have heard that there is some discussion at the state that a similar program might be implemented by the state, so it's up to you what you want to do with it. If we don't do it, you know, knowing that that could be with the state, I'm okay not doing it at the local level. I wish we knew for sure which way the state was going on that. The part that's a little difficult is even if the state would go with that, I think in the long run it would cost our people more through the state program. But because if we don't have a fee set and they came for us for compliance, we'd have to do the letter, which is $500. It's actually cheaper to do the fee schedule that was proposed with the way we had proposed it. So that was one aspect. And then the other thing was that there was just the change to line 8. I originally proposed it at $400 and later found out that the statute's capped at $250, which was an appeal fee, so that would be capped at the $250. Line 36 was not saying that we're approving a citation ordinance, but actually putting a cap on a citation if we get a citation ordinance.
Spell out which it is, because I don't have a
line. Sure. So line 36 would be the very last line, which says violation, or second to the last, I'm sorry, violation citation. And it's new. And what that is if there is a citation, it actually reflects state statutes, but makes it very clear that in no case could it go over $1,000. So if, hopefully when we get to the point to talk about citations and those types of programs, we at least have a maximum. And people understand that even if we do adopt such a program, the fee schedule doesn't allow it to be more than $1,000. And that's in combination with the way the statutes. It says that you can charge from $130 to $1,000, not to exceed $1,000.
What kind of citation?
For the rural land development code,
what's the difference between that and the violation surcharge?
The violation surcharge, my understanding, was what was in place before, which Commissioner Heck, my understanding is you questioned that, and that was found to be illegal, so that was removed from the books.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
That came from previous legal counsel.
Yeah.
And we've been doing it the whole time. And we've never, I don't think we've ever charged it. We've actually always waived it, but it's out there as an incentive.
Yes, so I think what was happening, I'm not sure, was that we were finding people without having anything on the books to allow us to find them. In the proposed text amendments for marijuana, there is a proposal for a violation citation section to be added to the ordinance. So if that passes, or even if it doesn't, and maybe something later passes, at least this fee schedule reflects that there can be a fee for it, rather than, because we can only change our fee schedule 2 times a year.
Right.
I didn't want us to say, if this does pass later on, to come back and not be able to actually even have a fee.
Right.
So it was just planning ahead for the what if, the whole fee.
So the text says 130 to not to exceed, but the other one says 1,000 varies. Or is that revenue? That's expected revenue is what it is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there was the appeal fee, which said originally proposed at 400, which we can't do it, has to be at 250. There's the citation. The other thing, which I had not brought up, but a member of the community brought up and I told him I would pass on to you, was the appeal, when somebody appeals to LUBA, we charge $2,500. And my proposal was that...
You charge $2,500 to, and who is appealing?
For example, in this last case,
right.
The appellant was the...
Rogue Advocates.
So they paid the appeal fee for it to go to LUBA.
Right.
And what we're saying is $2,500 does not cover that. It should be $3,500. He didn't have a question on that. His problem he wanted me to bring to your attention was he didn't think that they should pay that. He thought it should be the original applicant.
And you brought it to the whole of him.
And
well, of course he's going to want the applicant to do it.
Yes. And I said, and I pointed out to him, that wasn't part of the proposal. We weren't proposing that change. We were just proposing that the fee be increased to make it more equitable so the taxpayers weren't carrying such a portion of that burden.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that you're not appealing it without true standing, because it's a lot of work regardless of whether or not you have a good case or not.
Right. And make it, if you're going to pay the money, if you're going to appeal it.
In the game.
Yes. Absolutely. And to make it so the taxpayers aren't picking that up. So I did tell him I would bring that to your attention, but who pays it wasn't even something in my proposal. It was just the fact that that was raised, which we had talked about at the original public hearing.
Whoever files the appeal is the one that pays. Not the one you're filing against.
So
I think that's only fair.
So when you get a remand, who's paying? Because it's talked about here. I have questions kind of going through those. I've made notes and stuff, but I don't. That's one of them. We can start there. If that works.
Mm-hmm.
The remand, who's paying for that? It's not real clear. Appeal, LUBA remand, case to be paid by original appellant. So if the appellant is filing the appeal to LUBA, they have a fee as well. And it should be the same, right?
Right. So whoever is requesting LUBA look at it pays the fee.
Great. And are they the same fee?
Yeah.
Like if the applicant does it, the board says, no, sorry, you don't get to go forward. Do they have the same fee as the person who's challenging it, as rogue advocate as an example?
No.
No. Why?
It's slightly different, and what I'm proposing is that the one that goes to LUBA is actually higher. So right now, if they appeal...
I thought they both go to LUBA.
Hmm?
The decisions of the board are appealed to LUBA. I'm just wondering how come the applicant isn't the same price as the opponent? Would the opponent be the same as the applicant appealed to LUBA?
Well, the difference in the cost would be those that are remanded. Because
they're the same cost, both appeal to LUBA.
regardless of who does it.
Correct, unless it's remanded.
And then the cost on the remand, who's paying for that?
Whoever did the original appeal.
Okay.
Yeah. Because of the fact that there's so much, there's just that much more work involved with it once it comes back.
And you don't have to have the remand hearing if the opponent says, you know what, it was remanded for MUVA, but I'm not interested in paying the extra $2,000. And same thing for the applicant. If it was remanded for MUVA and they say, no, I'm out, we don't incur costs, we don't collect their money, right?
Right. What we would do is we would just issue the letter of withdrawal, basically.
Right. Okay. So. I wasn't terribly clear here. I understood that.
What else do you have on your assignment?
I had everything on that page was fine. Commissioner Hackett cited last time when we did the extension that he wasn't in favor of extending. We extended the whole thing, but he had expressed reservations about the annual compliance inspection certificate. Are you still in that position? Of withdrawing it?
Well, I'd like to hear. I don't know if I...
You would have made an amendment to the motion to withdraw it from extending it as part of the package. And I don't know that you can necessarily do that. It all gets... You can do that now. What's your position on that?
On the voluntary proposal for the annual compliance inspection, the $20. Mm-hmm. It's a voluntary program. Do you want it in or do you want it out?
What's the rationale? What's the reason? What's
okay.
talking about?
Sure. So this actually was brought to my attention by some marijuana growers who said, you know, we wish that there was a tax or a fee we could pay to show we're in compliance. A portion would go to the police and a portion to you, et cetera, and, which got me thinking about it, whereas it would be nice if there was some type. We don't have a compliance program saying your marijuana growing operation is in compliance with county codes. We don't have that. So the option right now is if somebody wanted proof that they were all in compliance, they would have to get a letter from us at a cost of $500. And we would issue that letter, and it would reflect that they're in compliance with rural land development codes and building safety codes. What this program does is similar. Somebody can request us to do that, and the fee is based on the size of the operation. And what happens is they get that certificate, and we will use it in the office when somebody keeps calling. We get sometimes, you know, we have some that have like 50 complaints about another grow, and we can say, look, we've been out there, we've issued them a certificate of compliance. It's good for all of 2016. They're good. I'm sorry, we're not going to do anything with your complaint. It gives us that ability to say, it's in compliance, this is a dead issue to us, we have other stuff to do. It also helps the grower who is having issues with his neighbor to say, look, the county's been out here, I'm in compliance with the county rules, leave me alone. So it's basically that ability to kind of have peace in the neighborhood by saying, look, I'm good, don't worry about me, but also gives the county the ability to say, we're not investing any more time on this property.
And
that's paid at their expense.
And the state is talking about this very issue as well.
So there's some discussion at the state level about a compliance program where they have to perhaps put a label at the road or something that says they're in compliance with OLCC or OHA or Department of Ag, whatever that ends up being, and the county. The jurisdiction. And the question was, or the conversation the person had with me was, Julie, how can we make sure they're in compliance with the county? And I said, well, they would probably have to get a letter from us showing they're in compliance. In our county, this was the place. We'd already, if it was a voluntary one, they would have already paid that. But absent this, I think in time you're going to see a program come down from the state where they're going to have to prove compliance with county codes.
My concern previously was that if this is not a mandatory thing,
right.
I'm not sure what's the value of it.
Well, it keeps peace in the neighborhood, and it generates revenue for us, and not a lot, but it also gives us the ability to say, We're not going out to that property anymore. Stop calling us. We've been out there. They're in compliance. I mean, I think we all understand how many times we can get the same call on a piece of property.
Sure.
And we, there's always something new to go out there. So we go out, you know, there's always a new complaint. We go out there and they're not justified. They're not real. And this is just kind of the hammer where we say, no, that's it. We're not going back out there in 2016. They have their annual certificate. I don't know how much it's going to get used. To be honest with you, I'd like to try it and see how it works.
Another point of that is if we do get a complaint on that property next door, we could go to that grower, that property owner, and say, you have an avenue here where we can come out, do our inspections, verify that you're in compliance, give you a certificate, and your neighbor can, you know, go away by that time. So it is another avenue where they can try to solve the issue.
Commissioner Walker, what's your position?
I support it.
Okay.
The reason being is that sometimes you have a very difficult neighbor that just doesn't like the industry, and they will find everything they can do to complain. They will complain to planning. They'll complain to building safety. They'll complain to health department. They'll complain all over the place. They will complain all the time, which takes an awful lot of time because as public servants, we're always trying to answer these people's concerns. And like Michael, right?
Mark
said, if they have that kind of issue, they can go out there and say, look, you know, we've had 15 calls the last month, and if you will allow us to do an inspection, pay for a certificate, we can give you a certificate, and you can post your certificate, or you can send a copy to your neighbor, or you can do whatever you want to, but you're in compliance, and that way things will probably die down because the neighbor will then know that you're in compliance. Or if they call the office and you say, hey, they have a certificate, they're in compliance, we're not going to investigate this anymore, and that's it. And, I mean, just to take it one step further, knowing how some neighbors are, sometimes they trespass because they want to go over there and, you know, take matters in their own hands. This would give them that additional thing that they could show to law enforcement, say, look, I'm in compliance. This person came on here without cause, you know, to make a disturbance simply because they don't like my farm or whatever. So I think it will be something that once it's used, people will realize that it's meant to be a protection for them, you know, to help them in a neighborhood so that they're not being harassed.
So this is a tough one because I'm under the auditive of innocent until proven guilty. This person's proving innocence before proven guilty or something to that effect. And it's optional, you know. I applaud you for wanting to have something as a good faith effort to try to keep these communities simmer down a little bit about this issue. I'm not sure that anybody's going to use this or it's actually even going to be effective because if you think about the 17 or so different agencies that you could probably list that they're going to call, this applies to the county codes. There's another, you know, X number of things that they could be in violation of. It doesn't mean they're 100% okay with everything. So I'm inclined to probably move it forward from the standpoint that, you know, what I don't want it to be is a revenue generator for our office. That's not what we're in the business of. We're in the business of trying to mitigate challenges between property owners, and that's our goal. And so for me, making sure that the fee is the right amount, it's not to exceed $500.
Just
people with 6,000 plants, $20 a plant.
It has a limit on there, which
it's
I think is
$100. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I thought.
Which is the same as if they came in and had come in and asked for a letter.
Yeah. So you can do the letter, and we're going to charge you $500, or through this program, it would cost you less. And when I say revenue generator, I'm not. Yeah. I want to make sure our expenses are covered. So.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's a lot of time and expenses.
We're going out to
Right,
we're going out to these properties over and over and over and over, and we're all paying for those inspections. By doing a certificate of compliance, we can at least try and cover some of those expenses and be done with that property.
Okay. I'm inclined to move forward.
I appreciate it. I love it. I like the idea. I think it's great. It's just that I'm the grower. Why should I have to pay $20 or $100? Why? And so, okay, I appreciate, you're going to have these problems? Okay, that's your problem. It's not my problem. You're going to Kevin, this guy has called you 10 times on my property. Okay, that's your problem and their problem. That's still not my problem that I should pay money for. That's my struggle.
And some growers will have that attitude. Some will have, and some do have that attitude, like, come on, you guys have been on here 10 times.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Why do we go out 10 times?
You know, we get...
Can't we just say we've already been out there?
They come up with a new complaint, a new violation, and you go out there and it's not true.
Well,
so
what's going to stop the certificate from somebody doing that? There's...
Well, they can try, and we're just going to say we're not going out there. We've been out there, we've checked for all of our codes, they're good for... We're not going out there. We're not wasting our time on that.
For how long?
It's in the annual certificate, so they would have to renew it every year if they're interested.
This is so challenging.
Well, I think... We're looking for
perfection as opposed to trying to make something just incrementally better.
Yeah, and I think... Here's my sales pitch to you, is try it for a year and see what happens with it. It's not costing us money, we're not doing damage.
We'll propose maybe another mid-year fee adjustment like we've
sure.
done there.
We're probably not going to see people until summer comes through, so that might be a little early.
Yeah.
But
okay.
I do think it's something to just
try.
For a year. Voluntary.
Right. Give it a shot.
Nobody cares about it. Total flop. We'll kill it next year.
Okay. So the other... issues that I have for the home occupational application with public hearing, there's a scaled element of home occupations, and it's not listed here. I didn't know that there were any that were above $1,000. All of them that request a hearing or require a hearing are $1,000.
Okay, so let me go back.
It's at the top.
So,
flood review, home occupation application, second page.
Okay, well, what happens is they are treated differently right now. And, for instance, bed and breakfast is currently at $2,000 as a home occupation. That's how it's listed. Yeah. And I understand why you're treating it as a home occupation. I personally think it should be just listed as a use. But regardless, right now the code says it's a home occupation and we charge $2,000. I personally feel that's a real detriment to creating tourism options.
Have you seen the graduated scale of home occupations?
And yeah.
That's still that high? I thought landscaping and home mechanics was pretty big.
No, it's bed and breakfast is $2,000. And I'm we're trying to grow an economy. We're trying to
Airbnb.
Showcase what we have
and
create lodging. And
I'm not disputing the logic. I'm just where's the scale that says this? And this is just referencing hearings. Not all home occupations have to go through a hearing.
Right. So what I did is, if you bump up a little and you just go to bed and breakfast. So I pulled that one out from the other home occupation, and I did that one separate. It's number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 for me.
Mm-hmm.
So... like I said, right now it's charged...
Yeah, $500. That's great.
Right now it's lumped in with home occupation that's $2,000.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I'm saying it should be $500.
Okay.
To encourage them.
I'm just down to the second page that says home occupation application with public hearing. It's $2,700 and you're looking to move it to $1,000. Let's just move on. That one's just fine. If you feel that the hearing is requiring that kind of... Not all of them are requiring hearing, though.
Right, but what I do think is the fees are a detriment to growing the rural economy. These household people
sure.
that could be making money in their home.
But it's also supposed to reflect the cost of doing that, and it doesn't feel like it should cost $2,700. So your $1,000 is fine.
Right.
Just wonder what else is needed, because the home occupational renewal, when we did the graduated scale, the board at the time felt, that was prior to this board, felt that I think we should do an annual. You're saying to remove that. You're not doing them anyway.
They're not doing them. And you know what? Once you get that permit, it should run with that operator or that property, depending how it's issued.
Okay.
So why do we go out there every year and look at that?
We go out because it could change. What business stays the same? They all grow. They all morph a little bit. And that was the expectation, that they're not going to be stagnant and that there needs to be a review to make sure. Because this is an exception to the residential use. It's not... just outright permitted.
Right. And with the 125, so what we were saying was, hey, buddy, you have to come in every year and get a renewal. and it's going to cost you $125. And we're going to sit at our desk and judge whether or not anything changed or not for $125. How valid is that?
Well, it's asking the person, has anything changed, to be honest, and stuff like that. So,
and they're not doing it anyway.
If that's the case, I endorse it. But we needed to have that conversation because that wasn't the conversation we had when we did the graduated thing. So
I think that probably wasn't known or realized.
I think we expected it to go this way, but whatever. LUBA record copy. Okay, so I've done 4 remands from LUBA since I've been on the board. Only one of them looked like the Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel. The others, there was one from Bob Hart a couple of years ago on the Illinois River. That was pretty simple. There were 7 elements, and so I'm just worried that we're trying to, you're gun shy based on the last Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel application remand. They're not all that way. So does that make sense? Is there a possibility of doing a graduated? Because the other one from was like, you know, the record was like this. It wasn't like this. I get you on the $1,000 for a record that's huge. But when it's, you know, photocopied, simple, remand.
So what this is...
Is that something you can figure out? It's like if it's under 100 pages or I don't know.
Sure. Let me
don't want to penalize everybody for this.
Right. I understand that.
Everybody gun shy.
And you know, when you're part of that process, that record is included in your fee.
Yours, right?
So this is, John Smith wants to know what's going on
exactly
with the case. He comes in and we're saying, okay, well, if you want us, we've already done this for all the applicants. If you want us to go through and copy everything again, you want a copy of everything, okay, but you're going to pay for it.
Right.
And then if you just flip to the other one, too, though, that's the other option where if they're just looking for copies of certain things, it's by a page thing. So they're not paying...
Yeah, 50 cents, $50 plus 25 bucks a page.
25 cents,
What do you get for the 50 bucks?
So with the public records policy...
$50 plus?
Yeah. With the public records policy, we can charge for our staff time, which Melissa comes out to... like $70 an hour or something when you include the benefits and everything. And then we can charge 25 cents per page on those. So what this is saying is if you want copies of stuff, we're going to charge you. It's, I mean, right now people are getting stuff, and granted Sunny Valley is the example that I've got here, but you know, everybody in their uncle is coming in, they're not parties to it, but they all want copies of everything, and okay, let's get everything out. Let's take another half a day and copy everything again. And it shouldn't work that way. And if people are going to do that, then they should pay for it.
What about requesting an electronic copy?
Like
disk. Don't we have to submit an electronic copy?
There
to
is a fee.
You know what I mean? That would be like, you want a printed copy? No problem. And then I'm okay. The $1,000 is fine. But offering them an alternative.
We do have an alternative in the public records one for disk. And it's no—it's more near that. It's
no,
like $5.
Yeah, right. It should be cheap. Okay.
But you know what? People don't want the disc. Well, okay, Sunny Valley. They don't want the disc. They want that paper in hand.
That's fine. Then they're going to pay $1,000.
Because, and you know,
as long as there's an alternative, you see what I mean?
Yeah, because you know what really triggered this thought process for me is, so we were emailing everything to everybody, and they were still coming in and saying, no, we want a paper copy. And I'm like, my God, you print it. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
My budget right now, just real quick, my printing budget right now is at 73% for the year.
So you're 50% of the year and you're 73% of your deal.
Yeah. My budget's going to be blown on printing, I'll tell you that right now. So this is helping address that, I hope.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that goes. Hopefully we don't have too many of those. The pre-application review. So when I talked to Harold Haugen about what that was supposed to do, originally there wasn't a fee, then it was established a fee, and now we're going back to not proposing not to have a fee. The reason for the fee is to try to weed out the idea that people are filing a pre-application on something they have given virtually no thought to, and they're coming in and asking just this portfolio of questions before they really know what they're asking, what they want. Mm-hmm. So it's to weed out the people who are using an inordinate amount of time for free. You see what I mean? There's a balancing act there, and careful what you do. I mean, if you have to shell up just a little bit of money, you're going to use your time a lot more wisely with asking the questions that are relative to the application you want to pursue someday, rather than somebody coming in and just speculating and using a fair amount of time.
Right. What
with
we do
no
right,
skin in the game.
Yeah, right. What the way we want it to work and the way it kind of does work is, you know, if you have a couple questions, I'm going to sit down and talk with you.
That's fine. That's not a pre-application.
But staff gets, they'll say, okay, now we're crossing the line. Now you got to pay for it. This came from, most counties do not charge a pre-app. And it ends up, again, looking at the economic development side of it, saying it's kind of a detriment. You know, give them the advice they want so they can proceed with the application. The 10% is really recouped in that application because you've already been through so much of that stuff when you were doing the pre-app
right.
with them. So that's where we're going with that.
Well, it's, I mean, it shows up to you. You got the paperwork from yes. This came in from on the fees. You got the packet on the duplication of fees and development and pre-app and all the other stuff. And he was.
Craig?
Yeah, Craig Dent.
I don't know who that is. But what I do know is when.
Valerian Holmes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is actually helping them with that, but
the philosophy of the pre-application also changes with every director that's come in. You're number four or five, and everybody sees it differently. What I want is some consistency, because the next, there's going to be anytime soon, is going to say, oh, why don't we charge him for the, you know, all the time? So it's just, we've got to get our heads around what a philosophy is about what this is, because it's not, I don't want it to be a detriment.
Yeah.
But I also don't want you guys spending an inordinate amount of time on people who are never going to result in an actual deal.
Right. You know, the other thing is, it's from a philosophical side, it's really unfair to charge somebody $375 to tell them no. I'd rather spend 15 minutes with you and say, this just isn't going to work, go away. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, nice.
Nicely.
Okay.
You know, but...
That's fine. That's fine. The next one is the following three. The property line adjustment. These are the last ones.
Okay.
Replat, lot line vacation, and I appreciate you moving in this direction, but I don't feel it's even enough. So I want to see the property line adjustment down to $500. You know, it's fairly simple. And if I'm wrong, if it takes an inordinate amount of work on, I mean, I've talked to previous directors that say it really isn't that big a deal. It's not $1,000 worth of staff time to do these. Or sometimes it could be, you know, that they're having, that's not the survey. That's just your office reflecting that change and saying, yes, you're not going to be able to provide it for another division of your property because you're going to do this lot line where you are. Or, you know, I want it to reflect actual cost of service, because this is the single easiest way to fix so many different challenges that it comes before this board on a regular, but for a lot line adjustment, we could fix that tennis court that's got the problem and, you know, not have to sell them a little bit of county property to do this. It'd just be so easy. Everybody has this issue. But for $500, if that's a reflection of what your office is going to take to do this, because then you're still going to have to go hire a surveyor to do the...
May I suggest something on that one? You have the fee here at $1,500. But if you put not to exceed $1,500, if you had someone that came in that just had a simple lot line that you didn't have to change any subdivision boundaries, or it didn't affect, you know, streets, or it didn't affect utilities, or, you know, those kinds of things, that may be a very simple one. But you might have one come in that, what I'm thinking of is that one party has a house with the tennis court on one side, and then they have the barn on the other way, and so it's going to be like
it's only part of the tennis court.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's going to be you know, Zora's been here, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, maybe that would
I like the graduated scales type stuff, if ever possible.
Well, it's kind of hard, though, in a lot line how to define that.
Exactly. What's the threshold?
But if you find that, you know, doing a typical lot line is just adjusting one line, you need to move it over 2 feet, and that's it. There's no buildings involved. There's no driveways involved. There's no third party involved that's, you know, has access, you know, maybe it's a flag lot, you know, something like that. Or then you start getting into having to do a lot more other things, then you could go to the 1500. Would that work?
Yes, but I think the max should be at the 1,000 that I'm... Okay, so it's at 1500 right now,
right,
which I think is excessive. I was proposing the 1000. I would I think a graduated is fine, and I can figure out how to do that. I would put the max of the graduation at 1,000, though.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I really would, because we want, I want people to come in and fix their problem.
Right.
I want their stuff on their property. Mm-hmm. We want to do that. And right now, why would you? It costs too much money to do that.
So we have that challenge at my parents' ranch, and we have an agreement. We're not going to do this. We're just doing it the way it's always been. For 50 years, it's been this way. And legally, it is where it is. You know, that's what but wouldn't it be great to just have it delineated appropriately? But I'm not going to spend $1,000 to have something that's not broken for us.
And a lot of people, you know, when they go to refinance or something, they have to prove they have to prove that, which is added cost to them, and they can't afford it. So it's the same thing with the lot line vacation.
They're all highlighted and saying, does it have to be, you know?
Lot line vacation, what I have found, is a very easy process. I mean,
that's what I was thinking.
So what I'm accustomed to in the planning world is if you have three lots and you want to make one big lot, you just have somebody re-describe it, and you have one big lot.
Mm-hmm.
We charge you to magically erase those lines. And so what is the incentive to make things right? So that's what this is doing. But
that's what we've always talked about.
I'll tell you,
not removing impediments to people doing the right thing.
Right. So to move it forward, how about if we go with what I have proposed as a max, and I'll come back with a graduated scale for the June hearing?
We're making progress.
Or even next week.
You never get these, though. These are hard. I mean, they're rare, right?
You've
got projected revenues, but I bet your existing
revenues
on this are very... In years past where we've addressed this, it's been like 2 or 3 a year.
You don't get many, but it's also hard to track because they're not always filed or coded that way.
Without even coming to you?
No. I'm saying is that they don't always get coded correctly.
I see.
So maybe it's coded as a replat instead of a lot line vacation or something.
Okay.
You
said that the lot line vacation is typically very, very easy.
Yeah.
Can we at least make those the same, that they're 1,000, not to exceed? Can we put a bottom on that of a 500 or something like that, and then you can work out a scale of why? I don't know. I just want to see these happen.
Sure.
And not have to wait 6 months.
Right.
Everything takes forever, and we just, there's an element of urgency. We can do whatever we want right now.
Yeah.
So...
Well, how about if I come back to you next week with a graduated scale? What I'd like to do is get to the point where we can approve everything else except for maybe like 2 or 3 things, so we don't have to keep going.
All getting approved. Yours especially. Yours is the challenging one. So I'm fine with coming back like on a Monday or Tuesday if that's in the element. Everything else we've kind of satisfied. We're endorsing. I was going to pull it. We're endorsing the certification.
So the only two you'd really want to see a graduated scale, something to come back on, is property line adjustment and lot line vacation, correct?
Sure.
Just those two?
Yep.
Okay with that?
No, we have to schedule for hearing.
Wednesday.
Right.
We can amend it right there.
We already had a hearing on this, though.
You have to have the hearing where we're not taking public testimony.
Okay.
We're just going to do it.
Okay, so we're going to do this on Monday?
Wednesday.
No, Wednesday.
Weekly business session.
Because it was continued to the 14th.
Okay, so we're not going to discuss it Monday. We're just going to go straight to Wednesday with it.
Right.
For adoption.
You can propose it there.
I'll propose it at Wednesday's meeting. Okay.
Yeah, we do eventually arrive at a conclusion whereby we are all in agreement.
Well, we force
it. And that way it will be done for January 1st.
We're forced to do it as you continue these things. So.
I'm just thinking I need an office here in the courthouse.
We're working on that.
Anyway, anything else on the planning side of it?
No. I don't have anything else.
So let's go to building safety. I mean, I wanted some explanation of Mark C's, and Mark has put together some information that we sent over to you.
The nice thing is, Commissioner Harris, yours is the difficult one now.
I know. I
so
like.
I'm hoping that my
explanation is a statutorily required process that's appealable to LUBA.
Yeah.
I'm not saying yours is not.
Okay.
So
I was hoping that this breakdown would give you an indication what the methodology is through the state, Maine's, and They even, I added a copy of their corrections to me on some things I needed to actually add to my fee schedules. And I noted those in this to you and some mathematical corrections they had me do.
I had a lunch half an hour ago that I should get to. One of the things that I was having challenges with is like the $75, but then you said, well, if I go out there on another inspection, it isn't. That has to be delineated so that you're not construed as picking favorites, or I wasn't aware that it could be less than $75. I just paid it because I thought I had to, or something. You know what I mean? It kind of, but it has to be delineated.
Yeah, we were talking about the plumbing side of it. Mm-hmm. And so when I address that in here, that is just specific to the one appliance, okay. One appurtenance, if that's the only thing we're going out on.
Right.
If there's anything on a job site, the state mandate is you pull a permit, it includes one kitchen, and it's based on number of bathrooms, that includes everything, right. All the infrastructure,
right.
Out to 100 feet,
right.
From that structure.
I read your entire packet, and yeah. It makes a lot of sense. When I started going through this initially, I was like, well, you know, the average is blah, 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 and started changing. And then you read this, and it's like, no, you can't just arbitrarily start from some number. You've got a formula that's defined by the state. So it
right.
really doesn't, you think you have discretion, but you don't. So your proposal, I may not agree with every element of it, but I think what we need to do is move it forward the way you submitted it, and that's my recommendation. And then look for an adjustment in June if necessary on anything that you have experienced as being, well, this is not working, and that sort of thing. So it was my misunderstanding that I had a lot more discretion than I really do. That looking at some of the state requirements, there really isn't a whole lot of discretion. I mean, you have a minimum fee required. You can't even set it at zero.
Correct.
And then there's a formula for how you're getting there, and once you start changing some of these things, it's all scaled to where it changes everything else. So,
and they don't explain why.
No,
you know, they have this methodology, and you've seen I had to add some suppression systems to residential and commercial.
Yeah, I saw that.
And some are based on straight fees, some are based on valuation. I have no idea why.
In the future, when
it's
you
your
do bit. This, I'd like you to make sure that you review these things. But this is so the estimated revenue, it's got to be based on the number of inspections you're doing, not on the change in the cost. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yours is correct. Yours is like, well, I'm sure that your revenue is going to be over $160 because you've got to be doing more than one plumbing permit inspection in a year. That's the equivalent that we're trying to figure out. How is this? And you tell us the whole budget is going to change, you know, based on this and possibly be right on. So it makes a lot of sense once you go through all the state statutory requirements.
And obviously trying to come up with an arbitrary number for cost is...
Yeah.
You know.
Well, keeping you in the black is a real priority. Your staffing is really, you know, I think at a minimum, so you don't want to hold up development because we can't get inspections done in a proper fashion. So
on that note, I just want to remind you that we're still working on the staffing issue as a result of the consolidation.
Great.
And the layout.
We have come up with a floor plan and an idea, and I've spoken to Ryan, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty simple transition to move us into a single department down there. A little crowded on the elbows, but we'll make it work.
Let's talk about that. I'd like to see what you guys have planned, because there's another plan in the works that could possibly work out, but you may not be there that long. Okay. So.
Anything else?
I don't have anything. Next Wednesday, have your work ready?
I can't wait to put this one for us.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I'm going to revise the schedule attached to the order, or we're going with...
How about if I revise it? Can I do this? With those amendments that I had, like on line 8, the appeal fee can't be over 250, can I send you a corrected one with everything we've agreed to today? Or do you want the original one still?
I'd say you need a track changes. You need the original one
okay.
I submitted, and then you need a track changes version of what you're proposing.
Yeah, and what helps is if you can put it in red so that
sure.
when somebody addresses that, we can pull it up and look at it.
Sure. A scanned-in copy for the public is fine. black and white probably. Okay.
I'll do a strike through with asterisks.
That'd be helpful.
So mm-hmm. when it's black and white, you can still see it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
good.
All right. Okay. When do you need that by?
This afternoon.
This afternoon.
We have to...
Has to be posted.
Okay, well, the sliding scale one, I'll just have an asterisk that says sliding scale.
It doesn't have to be posted this afternoon. Are you guys in tomorrow? Friday is the board projected.
We only have half staff tomorrow, right?
Hey, you want it? I'll get it to you. I have an appointment with Chuck this afternoon. Other than that, I'm good. I'll have it.
Thank you.
Okay. I mean, the law only requires 24 hours. Monday would be...
Is Monday okay?
Monday's okay with me. I mean, we're trying to get this done, and there's not much else on the agenda, so...
Okay.
I'd rather it be published correctly.
You will let her know? Okay.
Yeah, or in case you need, wants to make a plan.
So
for this afternoon, other than getting the reports in.
Julie?
Sorry, we're betting on the Packers.
Yeah.
We're doing the football sale.
Monday. We're going to do it Monday now.
Well, get the documents this Monday.
Oh, the deadline is Monday, not this afternoon.
Yeah, because you can't get it. It's already
12:30.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
We know it's coming. We know what's coming.
I have to do that 1:30.
All the other stuff looks good.
Okay. Resolution number 2016-071 in the matter of removing a member on the Josephine County Animal Shelter Advisory Committee. I attended the meeting last week. This individual was appointed to the board but does not attend, so they wanted to remove her so they can get someone who is...
Have they ever been asked about why they aren't attending? Or?
Just aren't coming. That hasn't made it a priority.
I'm good with everything else.
Okay, so we'll move that one forward to consent calendar. Item C, resolution number 2016-072 in the matter of a reappointment to the Bikeways and Walkways Committee. And this is Leslie Orr, and you work with this person?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have a problem.
Okay, move that one away over to consent. Resolution number 2016-073 in the matter of a reappointment to the Josephine County Parks Board, and that is, who's our Parks Board person?
Robert Chard. That's
fine. Robert Chard. Okay, and move that one forward to consent calendar. Do you have anything else today, Commissioner Hackett?
Yeah, I had a lunch.
Huh?
I had a lunch.
You had lunch?
I had a lunch.
You had a lunch. So
yeah.
Did I. I had an appointment I was supposed to get to, 12 to 1. I didn't get there.
Real poor moderation, Madam Chair. Really poor.
No. I will refrain. Okay. Nothing else. Okay, we are adjourned at 12:38.